Hello. In this audio snippet, we were planning to continue talking about Jim Brown, who passed away recently, and also talk a little bit about Raquel Welch. And then the intention was to eventually move on to talk about the 1876 election. But we'll have to put all of that on hold because I felt the strong need to share certain things related to certain headlines that have happened recently. I think, in a sense, it revolves around the death of another person who happened this week. And so we will talk about these about Jim Brown and things related to him and to his death in hopefully the next audio snippet. But this time I strongly believe that we have to share some thoughts related to a series of headlines that appeared this past week. One of them was something that I wasn't really aware of, maybe because I don't go out at night too much anymore, especially during the week. On weekends I do, but not during the week. And it turns out that, well, it doesn't have to be at night. I'm sorry. I mean, during the day I don't go out that much on weekdays either, but the thing is that there were reports of this red sun appearing all over the place in many parts of the U.S. In other words, that you would look up and instead of seeing a regular color sun, you would see a red sun. And there's this headline on the Daily Mail that talks about that. And let me just go quickly to it here. Let's see where it is. Yeah, it was posted on the 23rd of May, 2023, and it's from the Daily Mail, and it says, the headline is, "Why has the sun been so red across the U.S. recently? It has made for gorgeous photos in swaths of the country this past week, but the reason is sinister." And the sinister reason is that there were some wildfires burning throughout parts of Canada, apparently. Apparently, there have been like 84 wildfires burning specifically in Alberta, and that was the reason for the red sun. And here, for example, in the story, they say residents in New York, New Jersey, Chicago, Illinois, and Iowa are just some of those who have witnessed the blood red sun. And they have a picture of the skyline of New York City. And I think I see the Empire State there, and near the middle, around the top, you see this red sun. I mean, it's literally like a red spot on the photo. And it's interesting to me that they focused on New York City first, and then New Jersey, and then they have the next picture is from New Jersey. It just shows the sky and some trees. And it says, New Jerseyans woke up Monday to a red-colored sun. This has happened for more than 1 week and will persist for at least a few more days. So they're talking about this past Monday, which was the 22nd of May. And I find all of this interesting because, and again, they show another picture in New York City, from New York City, I think looking across the East River, if I'm not mistaken. And again, it's this big red spot on the sky, in the sky, that is actually the sun, just looking very, very red. And this is not a coincidence, I do believe, because we talked about the significance of May 19th. This May 19th that just passed, that was last Friday or some 8 days ago. That was a very significant day. There was something that turned in the atmosphere. And that was the day that Jim Brown passed away, if I remember correctly. And something happened, and I must say to you that on the days that followed, immediately after May the 19th, I felt a cloud of darkness. We had like rainy days in the New York area around that time. Very rainy days. There was like a darkness over it, but it was not. It was more than just the weather. I could feel something in the people and everything. It's as if up until now I could feel that there was something wrong, like that there was a dark cloud over the country, but it was there. You could feel it, but you couldn't see it. And starting on May 19th, it's as if that cloud went from just being felt, like just being this invisible thing that you could feel, but you couldn't quite make out, to something tangible that you could see. Literally, like now I can see the dark cloud over the country. It's not just a feeling, because there was this thing that apparently everything is more or less okay on the surface, where you have, you know, the sunny sky, but this darkness looming in the air, but now it has become a dark cloud, visibly dark sky, and I think it's not a coincidence that we have now this red sun, as this ominous, sinister, as this headline said, the sinister, ominous sun in the sky, the red sun, as if to indicate anger, and the sun was red because of this these particles from a fire that are burning in the sky. So there's something in the air. There's something not right, and there's something looming over the country, and it's not good. So we have entered into a final stage of death. And now it's a visible thing. It's no longer something that you could more or less feel, but you couldn't quite put your finger on it. Now it is a very visible, tangible thing, and it correlates with this red sun. And so this story came out on the 23rd of May. The next day, on the 24th of May, something very significant happened. And the way that I found out about this is also very peculiar or very particular, very unusual. Something very unusual happened to me on the 24th of May, and I won't go into the details because it would go into too many personal details, but suffice it to say, it was a very, very unusual, peculiar day. And if you had asked me 2 months ago, or even 1 month ago, or even 2 weeks ago, that whatever happened on the 24th of May would ever happen, that situation would ever come to pass, I would say, oh, no, that's very unlikely, almost impossible. I would have denied any or virtually any possibility of it happening. That's how unlikely it was, but it kind of happened. It's as if I was put in that position out of nowhere. So the 24th of May was a very, very, very particular day. And I kept wondering, what is significant about this day? Why is this happening today on the 24th of May? And because I knew it was going to happen a few days before it actually happened. But I kept saying, what is it about that date? And turns out that because of the circumstances, I was in a place where there was this not big screen television, but you know, this television on the wall. And I suddenly looked up and I saw they had, I forget what channel it was, it really doesn't matter. But it was a news channel. It was on mute, but you could see the images, and I saw the headline saying Tina Turner has passed away, or is gone, or dead, or whatever. I think her age was 83, and I saw that, and it shocked me. I didn't see that one coming. I didn't expect to hear about her passing, and I said, "Oh, this might have to do with why this date was so significant, and why what happened to me on that day had to happen on that precise day on the 24th of May, the day that Tina Turner passed away." And I know that this is very significant. In the last audio clip, we talked about the passing of Jim Brown, and then Tina Turner passes away 5 days later. And both are black, or were black, Americans, or people born in America. And I know this is all very significant, and even the name is significant, Tina Turner. Tina, that's not her real name. That was a stage name. I believe her actual name was Anna Mae Bullock, but she took the stage name Tina Turner. And I looked up the meaning of the word Tina, and Tina is kind of a diminutive. Like on Wikipedia, there's even a webpage on the name Tina, and it says that it's a diminutive for names such as Albertina. Interesting, because Albertina is the first name they mentioned, and these fires were happening in Alberta, Canada. So I know it's not a coincidence. It may seem like it, but I know it isn't. So it's a diminutive for names such as Albertina, Bettina, Christina, Christine, Christina with a K, Martina, Valentina, Faustina, etc. It says that the word itself may have originated from Old English, Tyne or Tina or Tina, meaning river. So that's what the name kind of points to, a river. So Tina Turner, I mean, you could literally translate it or interpret it as River Turner. So something happened on the 24th of May, like just like the May 19th was this a significant transition into a final stage of death. So where now the cloud of darkness over this country is visible, over America is visible now. And now on the 24th of May, we have a turning of a river, and that is a very significant thing. But before I go into more of that, I'd like to mention something that happened to me on Sunday, which was the 21st of May. So I went out and sat outside in a coffee place, at a coffee place. There was a table outside, and I've gone there several times, and I usually there are two tables outside. I usually take the one on the right because I just feel a little more comfortable on that table, at that table. But that table was taken, so I was forced to take the table on the left. And I sat down, and I started typing for the next posting on the for the website where these recordings are posted. So I was just typing and writing a lot about Orlando, Florida, by the way, And that's what I've been writing about, mentioning Orlando, directly or indirectly. But I've been thinking about the city of Orlando over and over and over again for a couple of weeks or 2 or 3 weeks now. I've been typing. And as I was doing that, I just kept, there was this dark, this cloudy feel to the day. The sun tried to peek out, but it just couldn't. So the sun kept covering the sky, so it was kind of gray and a little bit colder than it should be for this time of year. And there was a wind that was blowing, and it was just gusting and gusting. And I started feeling that wind on the 19th, if I remember correctly. I've been feeling that wind for several days now. I think I started feeling it on the 19th. It's a strong wind, but it's a very aggressive wind. It's not a pleasant wind. It's just like a wind of aggression just coming at you. And I was feeling a strong gust and coming at me. But it would come and go. And then at one point, there was this little girl with her dad. They were coming like towards me, and the little girl looked at me, and I looked at her, and she kind of like had this kind of smiley face on her, and I kind of smiled at her, and then I kept typing. But there, she was a cute little thing, and she was riding her I don't know how to describe it, this little thing that had wheels, but I don't know what the technical name for it is. But, it's the sort of thing that you have to kind of, there are no pedals. You just, you know, push forward with your feet kind of thing, like Fred Flintstone style. And she went past me, and then she stopped right behind me. And then she started talking to her dad, and her dad said, "Why are you staying here?" "Oh, I want." And then, you know, like a little girl, she and she was amazingly bright for her age. She was like a tiny little thing, so I don't think she was older than 3 or 4. Might have been 3. I mean, she was a tiny little bundle, And she started talking and saying, "Daddy, I want to be under this umbrella," because there was an umbrella right behind me, a white umbrella. It was this, like, I don't know if it's an umbrella, whatever you call it. It was, you know, one of those umbrellas that they had at this coffee place to cover the tables, and to cover so that people could sit under them. But it wasn't really over the table. It was like right, just behind me, you could say. So the thing is that she decided to stay under the umbrella. And then she said to her dad, and her dad was puzzled, you know, that the little girl wanted to be there. And I could hear everything because she was right behind me. And then she said, I want to be here, Daddy. And this is my secret club. And then her dad, he stayed on character. He just, you know, very plainly said, and she said, come be here with me in my secret club. And then he said, very matter-of-factly, "Okay, well, what's the password?" And then she said, "The password is Dabba Dabba." And then he said, "Oh, Dabba Dabba, okay." And then she started whispering, and I couldn't quite hear, but she was like saying Dabba Dabba as if to say, "Don't say it too loud," or something. That's kind of what I get that she was saying. So she stayed right behind me for a little while, and then eventually she said something, and I couldn't quite make out what she was saying. "Okay, we have to leave the secret club now," I think that's what she said, or something like that. And she stayed there for maybe a minute or so. And then she left, you know, with her daddy. And I said, what a curious set of events. And as I was sitting there thinking about Orlando and all the things that are happening in the country, I was also thinking, and in fact, at one point I wrote about, you know, in that article that's being typed up at this time, not yet posted. I ended up writing either a little bit before or after that incident, that about my intention to leave the country eventually, to leave America. There, it seems like this is an untenable place to live in, a place that you where you can't you really can't live and speak the truth without dying. And there's nothing wrong with dying for the truth per se, but if you die unnecessarily, that is a waste, you know, of time. It's like you don't give your life for something that's dead, that it has no chance of living, that doesn't want to live. You know, you don't do that sort of thing. That's ridiculous sacrifice. And I'm feeling this, that yes, it is time. It will come time for me to leave. I don't know how to leave or where to leave or where to leave to, but the thing is that time has come. But the thing is, the little girl left. Maybe 10, 15 minutes went by, and then suddenly this gust of wind came, blowing right at me, and the umbrella that was right behind me tipped over, and it was this metallic thing, but thankfully it tipped over in the opposite direction of me, and it fell to the ground, and it made this big sound, blah. It fell on the ground, and the guy from the coffee place came out, because you know he heard it, everyone heard it, and he came out to kind of fix it. And then he started telling me, "Oh, this is strange, because we have a wind tunnel here. The wind is gusting all the time here, but it's never done this to this umbrella." And the umbrella had these cinder blocks that were placed on this, like, I don't know how to describe it. The base was this cross, this X, like these two metallic things on which the umbrella stands. I hope you see what I'm saying. I don't know how to explain it. And the cinder blocks were placed over these things to hold the umbrella to the ground, you could say, and keep it standing. But somehow the cinder blocks got moved, and the thing toppled over. And he said, "I don't know how this happened, because you know, I've been here a while, and I've never had this problem. And there is a wind tunnel here, but I don't know what would happen." But when he said, "Oh, this is a wind tunnel thing," I knew that was not it, because I have been feeling a very unusual wind. There's something about the wind. It's aggressive, to the point that I was sitting at a bench during those days. I think it was during my lunch break, sitting outside, and I felt the wind was so strong, blowing, hitting my right eye, that my right eye was hurting for a couple of days afterwards. That's how, because it's like it was throwing dust particles right on my right side, and it was hitting it, and I felt the pain. There was something very nasty about the wind. Very like, "We don't want you here. We don't like you. Get out of here. We don't appreciate your kind." That sort of attitude. I don't know how to explain it. So it was more than a wind gust. That's what I know, and that's why this gust of wind was able to topple an umbrella that other wind gusts for a long time had not been able to topple. And I just said, "This is all very interesting," because the little girl was you know, sitting under the umbrella, saying, "This is my secret club, like my place of protection." You know, and her password was Dabba Dabba Dabba, which I found very, very interesting. The thing is that, and then at some point she said, it's time to leave, and she left. And then shortly after she left, the thing toppled. And thankfully she was not, you know, under the umbrella when it all happened. But I felt it was very significant. It's as if the little girl was saying, hey, America is this place, you know, where you have been able to take cover. There's been a covering protecting you, a partial covering, very imperfect, but it was there. But now the covering will be taken away and the protection will be gone. It will be time to leave. And the fact that the base couldn't hold up to the wind was, to me, significant, because this place happens to be called Jefferson's Coffee. And there are several Jefferson's Coffees. I don't know if it's like a big franchise or not, but there are a couple of Jefferson's Coffees here in Hoboken, New Jersey, where I live. And one of them that I used to go to a long, long time ago, when you'd go inside, it had this big thing painted on the wall that said, "We the People." So that tells me that whoever established this is like a conservative, because only conservatives say things like that, "We the People." And the fact that it's called Jefferson's Coffee, so it must be a person who is a fan of the founding fathers and all that. So it's a conservative place. And this particular Jefferson's Coffee doesn't have the "We the People" thing. I don't think I've seen it there. Maybe it is somewhere, but I know that the theme is around the Constitution and around, you know, the founding fathers. And to me, that base represented, you know, the foundation of the country, the founding fathers, the current Constitution. And the wind gust is coming and blowing it off, because that's a figure of the collapse of the country. The country will collapse because it was built on a shoddy foundation that is not capable of withstanding the winds that are coming at it. But the conservatives continue to believe that their foundation is so strong and so solid, so fundamentally sound, that there is no reason to change it, no reason to worry about restructuring it altogether. It's just a matter of getting back to that foundation and we'll be okay. That will be our little umbrella where we can hide. But no, the little girl knew that it was time to go. And it is time to go because that foundation, that covering is no longer reliable. And it will be toppled, and it represented to me, you know, the end of the country. And so now, returning to Tina Turner, she passed away on the 24th, and as we said, Tina Turner represents the turning of a river. And I kept saying to myself, well, what does that mean? And as the days passed, and as I saw the headlines, it became very clear. But just to say this very quickly, I did not know this until I found out actually a few hours ago that Tina Turner was no longer an American. Because when I went to her Wikipedia page, it said Tina Turner was an American-born Swiss singer. And I said, Swiss singer? And I, you know, the first thing I said was, say what? Because, you know, the last thing I would associate with Tina Turner is Switzerland. But as it turns out, you know, she was born in America. She was born in Tennessee and in Brownsville, it says here, on November the 26th, 1939. Wow, yeah, that was shortly after the invasion of Poland. Interesting. So that was quite a while back. And she passed away on May 24th, and she died in a town called, I don't know how to pronounce it, something like Küsnacht, Zurich, in Switzerland. So she passed away in Switzerland, in Zurich. Turns out that she had renounced her American citizenship. And it's interesting, that was like shocking to me to read that, because as I've been thinking about leaving the country, you know, my thought is when I don't know where I'll go, but exactly where I'll go. But if hopefully I'm able to leave the country after its death somehow, if I can find a way to leave the country permanently, eventually I will have to renounce my citizenship. And there are several reasons for that. First, because as a way of saying, hey, America, you rejected me. Well, I reject you too. And the second thing is that, as some of you may know, America has these tax laws where I think it might be the only country on earth that does this. It's so ridiculous. If you go live in a separate country, in a different country, you still have to pay US taxes on your income in the other country. So you have to pay taxes, I guess, in that country and taxes to the US. And so you're not making money in the US, you have nothing to do with the US, but you still have to pay the US government taxes. It's ridiculous. It's this over the top overreaching of taxation. You know, there's we talked about this very briefly in previous audio snippets a long time ago, about how the US Constitution needs a fundamental change in taxation. We need to constitutionally declare that the US government can only tax up to 20% of income. It has to be a flat income tax rate for any income above the subsistence level, like 36 or whatever $1,000, a certain amount of that we can declare subsistence level. You don't tax any of that, and any income over that you tax at a 20% flat rate, and that'd be the end of it. And there'd be no possible taxation of anything else, nothing else, except for tariffs, I believe that we mentioned. But there'd be no death tax, no all not all these things. You know, you have to pay taxes when you die. I mean, that's how ridiculous it is. And so one of the reasons why the Americans like, okay, not only am I rejecting you, I don't want to be forced to pay homage to you after you what you did to yourself and what you did to me, and what you did more importantly to the truth. So I would eventually, if I live long enough, I would eventually, I will eventually renounce my citizenship. And so it turns out that Tina Turner did the same thing. So let me look it up here. Yeah, it says here, on the Wikipedia article on Tina Turner, it says Turner began living at Chateau Algonquin in Küsnacht on the shore of Lake Zurich in 1994. Turner previously owned property in Cologne, London, and Los Angeles, and a villa on the French Riviera named Anna Fleur. In 2013, Turner applied for Swiss citizenship, stating she would relinquish her U.S. citizenship. The stated reasons for the relinquishment were that she no longer had any strong ties to the United States and has no plans to reside there in the future. That's going to be my story if I ever leave, I'm able to leave the country. It says in April, she undertook a mandatory citizenship test, which included advanced knowledge of German, the official language of the Canton of Zurich, and of Swiss history. And on April 22nd, 2013, she became a citizen of Switzerland and was issued a Swiss passport. Turner signed the paperwork to relinquish her American citizenship at the U.S. Embassy in Bern in October 24th, 2013. So in 2013, she basically went from being an American to a Swiss citizen. And I know that's it's as if it's like two people kind of saying we are parting ways, you know. On the one hand, America doing this turn, like this full-blown turn against the truth, and the truth doing a full-blown turn against America. Like, we're going to go our separate ways, and we shall be no more. Tina Turner's a very interesting story. You know, we all know about her time with Ike Turner and how Ike was very abusive towards her, and she had to separate herself from him. And Ike Turner never really apologized for what he did to her. Just let me look it up here. In his autobiography, Taking Back My Name, I'm reading from the Wikipedia article, Ike Turner stated, "Sure, I've slapped Tina. We had fights, and there have been times when I punched her to the ground without thinking. But I never beat her." And that's kind of like... that's America in a nutshell, especially conservatives. It's like we never willing to admit that they made a mistake. So imagine a guy saying, "I punched her to the ground without thinking, but I never beat her." So what was the punching to the ground? What do you call that? You know, caressing? What is that? And it's this like stubborn reluctance to admit that they are wrong. That they've done wrong, towards the end of her life, she started doing some spiritual singing and stuff like that. She turned into half Buddhist, half Christian. She was like she called herself a Buddhist Baptist or something like that, and she formed a group with a Christian and a Swiss Christian lady and I think a Buddhist lady, and they formed this group called Beyond, and they would do these spiritual kind of singing songs and things like that. And aside from you know what that all entailed, that's another story. But the point is that she was trying to reach up to a higher level of something. And that's why the name of this little group that she had called Beyond, that she formed with like neighbors there in Switzerland. This is like somebody who's looking for something higher, trying to go beyond. And I think that's part of why she left. She left America, you could say, officially in 2013 when she renounced her citizenship. That was in the midst of of old bastard being in the White House, and around that time, where the American Republic had just died in 2008, November the 5th, 2008. So we were like at the beginning of the degradation of the full blown degradation of the country, and it's as if she said, I will find no future in America. And if America had followed the truth, I think Tina Turner would have never felt the need to separate herself from America. And those spiritual urges that she had, she would have been able to fulfill them in a more profound, legitimate way in America, had America had this resurgence that it was being called to enter into. But on November 5th, 2008, it's as if America voted for Barabbas. You know, it's as if there was this voting between, you know, to use the biblical analogy of when the crowd was told to select between Jesus and Barabbas. And I think Barabbas, by the way, I think his name was Jesus Barabbas or something like that. So he was like a Jesus, but not quite the real Jesus. And that's kind of what America was kind of choosing between the truth and the fake truth. Something that claimed to be true, but it really wasn't, because Obastor was an imposter. And the moment they America elected the imposter, it's as if they chose, oh, we want Barabbas. We don't want the truth. We want Barabbas. And then the separation began between the truth and this country. And that's around the time when she left. And so the thing is, And by the way, Tina Turner, she had her start in the 60s and 70s, but then in the 80s, at around the age of 44, she had this amazing comeback, like this resurgence out of nowhere. And I know it's not a coincidence. There was something that happened during the 1980s, and she kind of surged in that, and she showed that she was able to transcend the 60s and 70s and go into a new era of musical development. And I think she's the only artist to have ever had like a top 10 song or top 100 song in six consecutive decades or something like that. If I remember reading that correctly, it says here in the Wikipedia article, in April 2010, mainly due to an online campaign by fans of Rangers Football Club, Turner's 1989 hit "The Best," the one that says "You're simply the best, better than all the rest," returned to the UK singles chart, peaking at number 9. This made Tina Turner the first female recording artist in UK chart history to score top 40 hits in six consecutive decades. So she was a person who was in transcendence. And so it's interesting that the very next sentence says in 2011, Beyond, her group, second album, Children, with Children United in Prayer, followed and charted again in Switzerland. So there was this transcendence about her, trying to go beyond just the established paradigms and go to something new and grow, not getting stuck. There was something about her. There was this kind of mantle on her about growing and expanding. And unfortunately, the country didn't provide what she needed because it was it's a country that is stuck, and conservatism is just stuck. And as a result, the whole country is stuck. Stuck in the past. And unwilling to apologize for its mistakes, just like Ike Turner. That's what conservatives are. One thing that I began to feel, and I'm not exaggerating, it's as if, as I was reading the headlines during this past week, it's as if, almost as if I could could see it. In my head, and it's as if I could see all the conservatives suddenly turn their back to me. I don't know how to explain it. It's as if I was standing in a place, and then suddenly, all the conservatives that were around me they all in unison deliberately turned their back to me, and started looking in the opposite direction. But it was not just as if they casually turned. It's as if they had decided to shun me, as if to say, what you do usually when you turn your back on something as a sign of protest or rejection or abhorrence. And that's what, as if they said to me, we don't care about anything you have to say to us. We don't care about your ideas. We don't care about your thoughts. We know what we're doing, and we're rejecting you deliberately and completely. And we're now facing in the completely opposite direction of you, and that's what I saw. I don't know how to explain it, but I saw that these conservatives suddenly turned their backs to me, and I say me, I personalize it, but this is to me like a figure of a broader thing that has just happened, and I think it happened on May 19th. I would say, this conservatives in particular make. Turning their backs to the truth, and saying, no, we're going to go full throttle in the opposite direction of what the truth says, we have to go to. And we don't care. We don't want your message. We don't care for your message. We have already decided we are going this way. It's just and they've been in that mode all this time. But now it's as if they finally said, we are committed to this 100%. And we're deliberately signing the document saying we are not turning back. Speaking of Tina Turner, we're not turning back. And so it's as if they're now not only going to make an effort to ignore the truth, they're going to make an effort to turn the river of truth, to have it go back in the opposite direction away from them. I don't know if I'm making sense. It's like, it's as if they are building a dam and saying, damn you, truth. We are not going to let your river flow towards us any longer and try to get our feet wet. We don't want your water. Get away from us. And they're building this dam, trying to make the river turn in the opposite direction. That's what I feel. I don't know how to explain it, but that's what I saw in my inner being. That's what I saw. The conservatives turning their backs to me and saying, we are not, American conservatives saying, we are not going to listen to the truth anymore. And just to validate that, let me share some of these headlines that I found. So we'll try to go quickly because we've already taken up a lot of time. The first headline I wanted to share with you is from a website that I visit reluctantly. It's a conservative website. It has some interesting headlines sometimes. Sometimes I just go there to kind of confirm, you know, how off we are. But it's AmericaFirstReport.com. And the person who runs this website is a well-meaning person. I feel a certain warmth towards him when I see him. He is kind of like the closest from all these conservative reporters and media people. The one who's closest to kind of the truth, you could say, whose heart is more open to say, hey, maybe we're missing something. But it's as if he knows he's missing something, but he doesn't know where to go to, and doesn't have the patience or the persistence to find that thing that he feels is missing. That he knows there's something wrong. There's a certain humility to him, but I think that he's so focused on his conservatism that he doesn't give himself enough time to look for the truth that he knows is out there that he needs to find. Very decent man. I think as a person, he must be a very, very nice person to interact with and so forth. But, you know, he's gone too. And he wrote this, and I feel so sad in saying that. He wrote this story that I'm going to go to right now. And the headline, this was posted on May 23rd, interestingly enough. Just like the Red Sun story was posted on May 23rd, the day before Tina Turner died, this fellow, J.D. Rucker is his name, posted this story on the 23rd of May, 2023. The title of it says, Faith, Family, Nation, How Common Priorities of Old Have Become the Keys to Our Survival Today. And it says here, we're in the fight of our lives, whether we want to admit it or not. Things are changing so rapidly that it's common for people to no longer notice how crazy everything has become. So he knows things are wrong. I read other stories from him, you know, and he knows there's something very wrong. He sometimes says, you know, God is our only answer. But, you know, that's a very generic thing to say, you know, that has to, you have to come down to concrete things, you know. If you are looking up to God for answers, well, there has to be an answer coming from him. And I think the only answer he thinks he's expecting is, keep up your conservatism. And that's why he never gets out of it. The thing is that it says here, ever since I was a young lad all those decades ago, I've heard different variations of the common priority list for a good life. My earliest recollection of it was from my uncle who said, quote, God, family, country, in that order, kid. And we've talked about this in previous audio snippets, the stupidity of this. It is just utter stupidity. And without going into the details we've shared before, if you believe in God and you're a Christian and you're supposedly believing your Bible, if you really believe in that book, how the hell where did this come from? I mean, if you're a fundamentalist Christian, you're supposedly deriving all your principles, life principles, from your Bible, right? Not from your head, not from your own personal opinions. I mean, if you're going to be consistent, Otherwise, you know, stop calling yourself a Christian or a fundamentalist Christian. Just say, oh, I kind of believe the Bible plus all these other stuff. But don't play this game of trying to have your cake and eat it too. So I would challenge anyone, where the hell is that from? Just show me the passage in your Bible where it says God, family, and country in that order. Show it to me. Where the hell is that? How do you live your life on a principle that is not in the book that you claim to have all the principles of life in it? Let's talk about family. We've shared this before. In your Bible, conservative Christian, there's a story about when Jesus was preaching to a crowd, and then suddenly his mother, Mary, and his brothers showed up. And Mary apparently told someone, go tell Jesus we want to talk to him. And someone came and said, Jesus, your mother wants to talk to you. And Jesus was in the middle of, you know, doing his ministering thing. And he said, he could have taken that moment and said, okay, it's important. Family is important. God is number one, then family is number two. And I'm going to show you how important family is. I'm going to go talk to my family because they just showed up. You know, he could have taken that as teachable moment and tell everybody how important family is, because family is very dear to us and family keeps us together and blah, blah, blah. He could have done this whole sermon right then and there about the importance of the family. And you know what he said? According to the Bible, it says that read it conservative, your own Bible, the book that you claim to live by. It says in your book, in your holy book, it says that Jesus then said, you know who my mother and my brothers are? Those who seek the kingdom of God. Those are my brothers and my mother. Seek the will of my father or something like that. So he basically said to Mary, buzz off, woman. I am in the middle of something here, and you're trying to control and manipulate my activities. You're trying to be a smothering mother here, and I will have none of that, because to me, my mother is whoever seeks the will of God. So, in other words, he was saying, family is nothing if this family is interfering with what God wants me to do. So it's not like he didn't even put it as in second place. You see what I'm trying to say? And the country thing, we've talked about this, the Good Samaritan story. When somebody asked Jesus, you know, who is my neighbor? Because he said, you know, the second commandment, he said the first commandment is love the Lord your God with the whole heart, your whole mind, your whole soul, and your whole strength. That's commandment number one, he said. I'm just quoting from your Bible, conservative Christian. Maybe not quoting exactly, but I'm getting very close to the idea. And the second commandment, he said, love your neighbor as yourself. He didn't say the second commandment, love your family. He didn't say love your country. He didn't say, you know, God, family, and country. You know, first commandment, second commandment, third commandment. He said, first commandment, love God with all your heart. Like, don't leave anything else, the whole heart to God. And then, number two, after having given your whole heart to God, according to him, number two, then love your neighbor as yourself. It didn't say love your family as yourself, love your country as yourself. It says love your neighbor as yourself. And then somebody asked him, who's my neighbor? And then he gave the story of the Good Samaritan. And we all know that the story of the Good Samaritan is this guy, this Jewish guy, got beaten up on this highway and was left by the side of the road. And then a Samaritan went by, and the Samaritan was not a Jew. Well, technically they were Jewish sons of Abraham, but they had kind of separated into like almost two different cultures, two different people. The Samaritans saw the Jews as foreigners and vice versa. So the Samaritan then, you know, helped the Jew and took him to some inn and left a couple of denarii or coins or whatever to pay for his stay so that he could heal at the inn. And then he said, so that was Jesus' answer to who is my neighbor. So the story, to explain who the neighbor was the interaction of two foreigners, two people from different countries, Samaria or was like considered a different separate country from Judea. It was like a different territory. So he didn't emphasize, oh, you have to love the Jewish people, and your country comes, is so important. You have to love your country. None of that. There's none of that in the Bible. This patriotism is not in the Bible. It is just not there. And that's separate from loving your country, but in a different way. It's a love, but not a love where you put it like in the list of priorities. No, it's like it's an overflow of your loving your neighbor, and you have love for the place you were born into, and you appreciate it if it's to be appreciated. But if it's a place to be abhorred, you abhor it. It because your focus is on the truth, not on your country or whatever. I don't know how to explain this, because I have had a love for this country for a long time, and I'm the type of person who, when I would see a flag, I usually tip my hat at it, out of respect. But it's not a worshiping of the country; it's a love. It's an appreciation of the beauty, and the opportunity to live in this country and to grow up in this country. There's something about this country that was special. And so you love it in that way, but it's not a love where you commit yourself in loyalty to it unconditionally, the way, patriots do. It's like, so all of this is nonsense. Okay, so then he starts talking about faith. And he starts talking about his faith in Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior, blah, 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 and the importance of faith, blah, 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 blah. And the thing is that it says here, faith gives us emotional strength. It contends with the impulses we may have to take the wrong path. Most importantly, it gives us, our families and our nation, the hope that is becoming increasingly necessary. The people are understandably losing hope for their families and this nation. We see a dark path being paved for everyone other than the elites. With faith, we can persevere through the tumult, knowing that God wins now and always. Even as we go through hardships, the faithful can sense the literal light at the end of the figurative tunnel. So faith becomes this emotional crutch. That's what it becomes. And, oh, faith gives us hope. You know, faith is useless if the object of our faith is useless. You see what I'm saying? Faith, that's what I find so annoying when people talk about the importance of my faith. No, no, no. It's the importance of what you have faith in, not your faith. I hope you see what I'm saying. Faith becomes this kind of code word where you can hide, and there's a certain emotionalism to it. It is disgusting to me. It's disgusting. What keeps you going through life is not your faith. It is the object of your faith. If you believe in God and you're going through a tough path, it's not your faith in God that gets you through the trouble. If God exists, your faith in God is not going to be the one that gets you through the trouble. It's God who gets you through the storm. You see what I'm saying? Can you, conservative Christian, quote me a psalm, one of your psalms that says, my faith carried me, like, it doesn't say faith is my shepherd, it will guide me through the valley of the shadow of death. It doesn't say faith. It says, the Lord will be the one who guides me through the valley of the shadow of death. It's not my faith that gets me through things. It is the God I believe in, if he's real, who gets me through these things. So when people talk about faith like that, it is so annoying, because it becomes this emotional crush. So now faith is, because he knows it's hopeless. The country is gone. It's gone. And I'm quoting a lady that I see in a commercial all the time. That's how she said it. It's gone. And he knows it. And instead of looking to the object of his faith and saying, hey, God, what are we doing wrong? He's saying, no, just hold on. We just hold on to our Bible and our, limited interpretation of it. Let's hold on to our dear Constitution on the other, with the other arm, and let's bow to our little statues of Jefferson and Lincoln and Madison and George Washington and all these guys. And let's keep bowing our heads to them, and let's hold on and wait and hope that, yes, God will somehow make this all happen and get us through this storm. And we need the hope. So faith becomes this crutch, emotional crutch, just to give us artificial hope. But hope is useless if there is no hope. If a situation is hopeless, why are you going to have hope? The country's gone. It's gone. And it's because of people like this who are more concerned about giving themselves hope and satisfying their emotions than about finding the truth. And then he goes on to talk about family. And it says only faithfully living under a biblical worldview can solve these challenges. And he talks about, but where he doesn't even have anything to quote from the Bible to talk about why he prioritizes family. For those who are firmly set with prioritizing family, we must continue to work harder. That's not just about being good parents, spouses, and children. It's about defending ourselves and our family members spiritually and physically. There's a reason why nearly all of my sponsors are geared towards some form of preparedness and blah, 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 blah. But so he mentions the Bible and then talks about the priority of family. But there's no connection between the two things, because he can't quote a single passage from the Bible to say you have to prioritize your family. So that's where we have the disconnect. It's like people who don't see how messed up they are in their understanding, how limited and confused they are. So they're clinging to these old things. And he says the third priority is nation. It's not about sheer patriotism. Preserving America isn't about saving democracy or empowering capitalism, as many believe. Those may not have been important aspects of our nation's role in geopolitics in the past, but we're no longer a representative nation of freedom or economic opportunity. What is not an illusion is the biggest reason we must defend our Constitution and do everything we can to prevent our nation from falling. Religious freedom is a uniquely American thing, and blah, 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 blah. So again, he has no justification for saying, fighting for our nation, or being patriotic. He has no explanation for it. No, we just do it because it's God, family, and country in that order. So going back to old vomit, like a dog going back to his vomit. This is the this so. As the country has entered into the state, this final stage, the start of May 19th, on this final stage of death, now there's dark, there's this visible dark cloud over the country now. As we enter that final stage, what are they doing? Doubling down, saying, we are going to double down on our old values, going back to the same dead things to try to make this country come to life. I might, well, there are more things that we could read from here. Then he starts quoting from the Bible, but like saying, deliver us, God, and all this stuff, quoting from Daniel or whatever. But he has no foundation, biblical foundation for anything he just said. All of it is just fluff. It's nonsense. And he basically saying we're doubling down on our love for the Constitution. And we're going down with the ship, and they are going to go down. So that is so disheartening to read all of this. And remember, this thing is very important. If you miss everything else, do take this one of these things away from this audio recording. Faith is useless without the object of the faith. In other words, faith itself. You know, I could have faith in a lava lamp. And have all my faith that, I will get through the rough times because my lava lamp will guide me through the darkness. Maybe literally, the lava lamp is not going to change things. It doesn't have the power to change things. And all your faith does is just give you an emotional crutch and give you a false hope. You have to face reality, and this is what conservatives don't want to face. They don't want to face reality because they want to still preserve the fantasy they have in their head about their constitution, about their way of seeing the world. And that's the same thing with conservative Christians. They have a view of the world, and they want to keep the fantasy going. And they don't want to recognize the hopelessness. This guy has come very close to feeling hopeless. I read the articles, other articles, and it's like he knows there's something very wrong. And we should face the hopelessness and say, okay, there's something very wrong here. And I need to face it. I need to come face to face with the hopelessness, because that's the only way we can start looking for the solution, for the true solution. But these guys don't want to do that, because doing that would mean renouncing the fantasy. So they keep on holding on to their faith in their lava lamp, waiting for the miracle to happen. And it's not going to happen. We're hopeless, and we're in a state of hopelessness, and we will die because of people like him who refuse to look in a different way. And like him, he has joined everybody else who are turning their back to the truth. He may not be as violently turning his back as all the others, but he is joining the group and forming the wall against the truth. Like saying, your river of truth stops with us. We are the dam that turns you back. And then there's this other story. This one really angered me, and this audio recording is going way longer than I expected. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to get through all the things we wanted to share, but let me go to this other story. This one really, really angered me. It had me really, really shouting in real anger. But before I go to that, let me just read. Let me go to this story. It was posted on May 24th, the day that Tina Turner died. Posted on the Gateway Pundit, and it was written by Colin Linebarger. And the headline says, Reverend Franklin Graham issues warning to America. The storm is coming. Every demon in hell has been turned loose. And it's interesting. It's like he knows the same thing that I have felt, the dark cloud. He felt it. So he's saying the same thing. The storm is coming. So and interestingly enough, he was in, of all places, Orlando, Florida. When I saw that, I said, oh my goodness, I've been thinking about Orlando, Florida, writing about Orlando, Florida, directly or indirectly, all this time. And I was writing about Orlando, about things related to Orlando, Florida, when the little girl incident happened at the coffee place. So he was in Orlando, Florida. It says, Reverend Franklin Graham has warned America about the coming storm headed its way. Churches and ministries are in the crosshairs. And so he was speaking at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Orlando, Florida. And it says, the world has, he said, I believe there's a coming storm that we all need to be ready for. The world has deteriorated so quickly. We cannot be deceived and we can't be fooled. We need to get ready and get prepared. It's not going to be good. The world's deteriorating so quickly. It seems like every demon in hell has been turned loose. And he says, the storm's coming where we're going to be off the radio and television and the internet. So he's feeling that we're going to enter into some sort of deep censorship or something like that. But the thing is, it says, and he's talking about some Samaritan's Purse thing that built its own data center in Colorado that can keep operating without worrying about an external supplier in case, you know, that everybody censors, Christian sites and whatever, and he said, we built it big enough so that we can help other organizations if they want to store their data there, too. And then he wrote, he said, "We cannot back up. We can't retreat. Don't apologize for the gospel. Just declare it. Just preach it. They want us to shut our mouths. They don't want to hear from us. If you're not going to preach the gospel, you don't have anything to worry about." So he is feeling the impending storm, but instead of saying, okay, what are we doing wrong, he's doubling down. He says, we cannot back up, we can't retreat, don't apologize for the gospel. But he's saying, don't apologize for the way for our understanding of Christianity. Don't apologize. We are just going to keep going and preaching the same dead drivel and same nonsense and same useless preaching. The same preaching that leads to people saying God, country, and family in that order. And with no biblical backing, people who don't read their Bibles. I mean, if you're going to be a Christian, at least be consistent about it. Otherwise, what the hell are you doing? You know, at church, why are we wasting your time if you're not going to be consistent about it? Just get the hell out of there. The thing is that, and just as a side note, it's interesting to me that I can't watch any Christian station now on broadcast because I don't have cable or anything, so I have to rely on broadcast channels. And the Christian channels like TBN and others, I can't watch them anymore, and I literally can't watch them because every time I flip by them, the signal doesn't come in. And it's interesting that it had this, and it usually happens like it comes and goes, but for some reason it's now consistently the signal is not coming in from these Christian channels, and it's happened exactly after I did that. We shared this audio snippet on that guy who preached about mammon. If you have been listening to the audio snippets, you may recall what we're talking about. Then I mentioned that I heard a preacher talk about mammon, and then he ended up talking about asking people for money as he was preaching against the spirit of mammon. It was so the direct application is you will fight against the spirit of mammon if you give me money. And the contradiction is so so blatant. I mean, the deeper principles that he could have extracted from that mammon thing, we shared some of that in that audio snippet. There's so much deeper, but all he was thinking about is money, and this is an opportunity to get people to give more money to my ministry, and that's how I'm combating the spirit of mammon, by telling people, don't hold on to your mammon, give it to me. And ever since I shared that, I haven't been able to watch anything else because I've been kind of like waiting to see what else can I catch them on, or like some other stupidity that I can just mock them about. And now I can't even watch them. It's as if, I know this is not literal, but it's as if figuratively they said, oh, you're never going to use your words against us again. We're not going to let you hear us say another stupidity so that you will not expose us publicly on the internet. So it's as if, you know, we're not going to let you shame us again. So now they are not letting me watch anything. So I can't watch any Christian channels anymore, which is sad in a sense. I don't like them, but at least it gave me something to point out as it happened with the mammon thing. So now I'm going to get to the story that really angered me. Really, really angered me. Let me see. Let me try to find it. Sorry. It's something about a leaked audio. Here it is. It's from the Gateway Pundit again. This story was posted on May 26th, 2023, and the title of it is "Leaked Audio Exposes DeSantis Campaign Strategy on Abortion." Now, speaking of this, just as I saw Tina Turner's death on television that day on May 24th at that place where I was, I also saw that they were talking about DeSantis announcing his presidential run on that same day, May 24th, which is interesting. And I couldn't hear anything. I just saw the headline that he was announcing his candidacy and all that. But then I found out that he had some technical problems with Twitter and whatever. And the conservatives who hate him because they're Trump lovers, they're all mocking him and they're poo-pooing him and trashing him profoundly. Which is interesting. So they are all, putting all their chips on that ship called Trump, that, as we've shared before, is a waste of time, because Trump is he provides the energy, the dynamism, that conservatism doesn't have. So it's like it's their only hope. DeSantis is a more mellow fellow. He's a little blander, so he doesn't have the excitement of Trump. And Trump is like conservatives trying to validate their conservatism and say, hey, we have dynamism in our stale doctrine. And there's this guy who is active and doing all these things and saying all these things. And that's why they like him, because he validates the falsehood of their doctrine. It gives them a false sense of hope that there is a reality, a dynamic reality to their stale philosophy. And that's why they like him. And DeSantis doesn't have that, so they want to trash him. So Trump has already been in the White House. He proved he couldn't do the job. He couldn't fight the deep state. He was listening to the deep state all day, in the mouth of the son of a bitch, son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and his worthless bitch wife, Ivanka. So he kept listening to these two, the bastard and the whore, talking to him, and he had surrounded himself with a whole bunch of backstabbers. You know, everybody kept saying, oh, he's so smart, he's keeping his enemies, his friends close and his enemies closer, he's using strategies, blah, blah. All he was doing was putting all his enemies within, reach of his back. So then he started looking around, he saw all the knives on his back, and he said, what the hell? And, obviously those knives are on his back because he put all these enemies within, reach of his back, so they could all stab him in the back. And so, and he's still supporting the injections. So he's a failure, and he's going to fail again if he ever had a chance. He's not going to be given a chance to make it into the White House again, but even if he was, he would fail all over again, and it would be even worse. And then they would come up with an even worse virus to shut everything down and destroy the country even further. And he wouldn't have the power, the ability to stem it, to stem the tide. But still, conservatives go, no, he is our hope. He's our hope. It is this obsession. Like, we are not backing down from our understanding of the world and reality. So they are supporting Trump and trashing DeSantis. And DeSantis is no angel either. I'm just saying the reason why this is happening is because of that obsession. So let me read some of the things very quickly. Time has gone by, and I think this audio clip will have to be split in two again, like so many things that I never get to finish in one run, because there's so much I mean to say. It says, a leaked audio clip from the secret DeSantis donor strategy meeting held at the Four Seasons Hotel in Miami on Thursday has surfaced, shedding light on key aspects of Governor Ron DeSantis' campaign plans. In the leaked audio obtained by Florida Politics pollster Ryan Tyson, can be heard addressing the donors, expressing enthusiasm about the level of recognition Governor DeSantis enjoys on a national scale. And then blah, 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 blah. And then he says, he says, during the donor meeting, strategists conveyed DeSantis' intention to pivot his campaign strategy towards the middle ground as the election progresses. The governor's advisors recognize the importance of appealing to a broader electorate and believe that adopting a more moderate tone could help solidify his chances of securing victory in the general election. So he says, so when you're talking to a pro-choice donor, I don't think you just sort of go by and say, look, abortion is legal in Florida, it's legal in Florida. In most situations, when people have a situation unwanted or an unprotected sex situation, they're going to use the chemical fashion, right? So you can come right at them and say, it's legal in Florida. Now, it's limited. You have to be responsible about it. But I don't think when you're talking pro-choice Florida, you sort of skip over it. You have to point out that this is a major step forward for the Republican Party in terms of moving to the middle of the abortion issue. And I think I must have gone to the wrong article here, because I wanted to read what this guy wrote, and I think okay here it, no, I'm sorry, this is the right article. It says, quote, his position is, while he understands that there are ways that the federal government can be helpful to preserve life, the best way that you will preserve life is at the state level. He worries that if the federal government starts getting involved in it with abortion, that it's actually going to open up the door for Democrats to roll back pro-life reforms in many of the states across the country. That's what this person said. This Tyson person said. Then the writer of this article wrote, this position is in line with conservative principles and reflects the sentiments shared by many Republicans across the nation. However, the recording reveals a twist in DeSantis' approach, indicating a potential shift towards the middle during the general election. So he's saying we're not going to be as forceful about abortion in the general election. And basically, they're going to adopt a more like Clinton's approach, that it's going to be safe, legal, and rare. In other words, that abortion can be allowed in several states if you want it, but it should be rare or not. It should not be promoted, and so forth. So DeSantis is being criticized for this. First of all, this is being said not by DeSantis, but by a campaign person. So who knows what DeSantis really thinks? This is, you know, he says it's a pollster, Ryan Tyson, who maybe works for DeSantis. I don't know, but first of all, it's just not right to criticize DeSantis based on what this guy said. But what angered me, what really angered me about this article was this stupid son of a bitch. And sorry for saying it like that, but every time I read that about from this guy, I get angrier and angrier. Jim Hoft, and ironically, he's one of the persons I think who runs this website that I go to all the time, the Gateway Pundit. I think he and his twin brother, Joe Hoft, but this Jim Hoft and his brother every now and then anger me constantly. He's turning into this stupid son of a bitch, conservative bastard, son of a bitch, stupid, stubborn idiot. And let me tell you why it angered me to read what he wrote. When he said, this position is in line with conservative principles and reflects the sentiment shared by many Republicans across the country. In other words, leave abortion up to the states. Decide. Let the states decide. So he's saying he's okay with that. In other words, if New York State wants to validate abortion, go ahead. It's your thing. The important thing is to maintain federalism and the Constitution and not to let the federal government get involved in these matters. So if I said to him, you stupid son of a bitch, and that's how I would address him, you stupid idiot, Jim Hoft, you son of a bitch, You live in Missouri. I think he lives in Missouri. In Missouri, the state of Missouri, they decided that church going is going to be limited to one time per month. And it's not going to be allowed anymore. And I think this guy is a Christian, quote unquote. And I'm pretty sure that he'd be outraged. And he would say, no, how dare you do that? He would be up in arms if it was done to him. Or if it was done, let's say, throughout the country, in other states, he'd be in an uproar about it. He wouldn't say, oh, the state has the right to limit a person's religious practice, especially to limit Christianity. He wouldn't say that. He'd be outraged, too, even if it happened outside his state. Or if somebody said, well, somebody legal in some state legalized or kind of gave very light penalties for murdering kids before the age of five, I would think he would be outraged, I would imagine. But if it was passed by the state, remember, the Constitution has no say on the matter of murder. We've talked about this before. The right to life doesn't exist in the Constitution. It's such a stupid document. It doesn't even have the right to life. Your right to life, your constitutional rights are not violated if you're murdered. Just think about that. And I've said that a million times, but just think about that one more time. If somebody's murdered, his constitutional rights were not violated because it's not in the Constitution. The Constitution does not protect the right to life. It doesn't protect the right to property. If you're robbed blind, if they rob you of every possession on earth that you have, and whoever robbed you did not violate your constitutional rights because the right to property does not exist in the Constitution. It's not there. So if a state decided to murder, to put like a very light sentence, like 5 years probation to someone who murdered a kid before the age of five, that would not be against the Constitution. The federal government would technically have no power to say to that state that law is wrong. So would he be outraged? I would think he would be, but the thing is, what angers me about this idea that, okay, abortion is supposedly, I'm speaking even from his perspective, I'm talking using his own words, is an abominable practice. I imagine he must think it's a horrible, horrible crime against humanity. Yet he's willing to let it go on in other states. So, okay, as long as it's not in my state, don't mess with my state. But because I'm going to go live in the state where I feel more comfortable, where everybody is more like me. But if this horrible crime against humanity is happening in another state, that is that state's business, and the federal government shouldn't be trying to get involved in changing that. And you know, that's the same argument with slavery. Okay, I don't like slavery, but every state has its rights to practice it. If they're practicing it and committing all these horrible, heinous crimes against black people, it's okay. It's not my problem. The important thing is the federal government should not get involved. That is what angered me about this. You stupid son of a bitch. If abortion is such a horrible crime, why are you willing to let it stand in any state? And you know why? Because he has to choose between abortion and federalism. And he chooses between ending abortion and federalism. And he always chooses to protect federalism over the fetuses. Because to him, saying, no, we should have the federal government have the authority to ban abortion across the country, that is horrible to him, because that would mean the violation of state rights. And that is a worse crime to him than killing a fetus or killing millions of fetuses. The same thing happened with slavery. It's more important that the federal government remain restrained, because it's more important to protect state rights than to protect the rights of black individuals. And that's what federalism always does. It always puts the state above the individual. It was just ironic, because all these people are always talking about, oh, we hate the government, we all hate this. But when it comes to state government, suddenly they are more loyal to that than to the individual. So how can he possibly say that this could align in alignment with conservative values? So he's okay with abortion being decided at the state level. So he's okay with fetuses, using his own words, being murdered, unborn babies, using his own words, being murdered in other states as long as it's not his state. But the problem is it always ends up coming into your state. You can't run away from it because it's like a flood. It's just, even if you think that you are in a state that is safe, eventually the flood will come and hit you in your state. and just to validate that, let me mention quickly this story that I found today. And I found this a few minutes before starting the recording. I was about to start the recording and I felt a voice say to me, go to the Epoch Times app, which I have on the phone, and read one story. That's all I heard. Read one story. So I just clicked on the Epoch Times, and I saw this one story. I said, okay. And I just clicked on it. And it was the story, the headline is, let me see if I can find, I have it here. I think you have to have, like, I contribute to the Epoch Times a little bit, so it's not that much. It's like $1 or $2 a month, and they give you access to their articles. And if you feel like led to subscribe to them, I would recommend it just out of principle. If you go to Wikipedia and read about the Epoch Times, it says it's a far right website. And they, because Wikipedia, when it comes to political things, is very extremist leftist. So, you know, when you're a radical leftist, everything is to the right. So everything that's, you know, near the truth is far right to them because they're so far away from the truth. So so they label it as a far right website and critical of the Chinese Communist Party as if that was a bad thing. And then they keep poo-pooing the New York, the Epoch Times, and saying all these bad things, like, and so and so said that this is a radical website and blah blah blah. So all these just trashing, so disgusting, and it's not a perfect site. It has some issues and so forth, but it's a site I would recommend. It's founded by people who are of Chinese descent, I believe. People who openly speak out against the Communist Party to the point that the Epoch Times is banned in China. People in China cannot read the Epoch Times. And that doesn't get Wikipedia people thinking, you know, like, okay, the banning of a site by a regime, you know, they don't associate that with despotism or dictatorship or oppression of freedoms and... because they don't think like, because they are fascists too. Leftists are fascists. They are the real fascists. They're the ones imposing the point of view on anybody else. Anyone who disagrees with them will be censored, destroyed, obliterated. So to them, censorship is a normal thing in their little twisted world. So now I'm going to read this article from that was posted on May 27th. That would be today. So it says, judge blocks South Carolina's heartbeat abortion ban for now. And it says, a judge on Friday temporarily blocked an abortion ban in South Carolina, pending a review by the state Supreme Court. The move by Judge Clifton Newman comes just a day after Governor Henry McMaster, a Republican, signed a measure into law, which came into effect immediately. The law, S-474, or the Fetal Heartbeat and Protection from Abortion Act, banned most abortions after a heartbeat is detected, which is usually around 6 weeks of gestation. There were exceptions for rape or incest during the first 12 weeks of pregnancy, as well as medical emergencies or fatal fetal anomalies. Doctors found guilty of violating the law would face potential felony charges and up to 2 years in prison, as well as a $10,000 fine. And so forth. So this law was struck down, and apparently was struck down by this judge temporarily, apparently. It says here, let me see if I can find it here. They mentioned the state constitution. It says here, in January 2023, the South Carolina Supreme Court struck down a similar heartbeat abortion ban, saying it violated the state constitution. The 3-2 decision came nearly 2 years after McMaster signed into law in 2021, a separate, almost similar fetal heartbeat and protection from abortion act. The majority opinion in January 2023 was written by the court's only female justice, Kay Hearn, who retired shortly after the decision in the same month because she reached the mandatory retirement age of 72. Hearn wrote in the opinion that although lawmakers have the authority to protect life, the privacy clause in the state constitution provides women with time to decide if they want to get an abortion, and most women don't know they're pregnant 6 weeks after conception. So now this judge in 2023 recently apparently struck down this new version of the heartbeat law because he wants to give it time to reach the Supreme Court. So it's like he's holding back the law and forcing it to be heard by the case to be heard by the Supreme Court of South Carolina. But what I found interesting is the state constitution is violated by this law. And so she talks about this privacy clause and all this stuff. And so I don't know what the South Carolina state constitution looks like, but I think it's a bit of a reach to say that there's something in the state constitution that protects abortion. And the privacy clause, as we've shared before, privacy cannot be used as an excuse for this. If abortion is the termination of life, which would be invalid in the new American Constitution, if we explain what life is, it would even extend to animals. We talked about this before. So even if you have debate questions of whether the fetus is a human being or not, to me, the question is irrelevant. It's a living thing. You know, a dog is a living thing. A cat is a living thing. A fetus is a living thing. It fulfills all the requirements of a living entity. So and obviously this thing turns out we all were fetuses once. So there's something special about this thing that is different from a dog or a cat. So it deserves a protection that is similar, if not greater, to what a dog and a cat, get in terms of protection, supposedly under the law. So if you have a baby inside your house, it's in the privacy of your home, and you start beating it up, beating it senseless, would the privacy of your home protect you from being accountable to the law for beating up the child? Of course not. Privacy has nothing to do with this because we're talking about another living entity. I mean, you don't want to call it a human, whatever. It's another living entity inside your house. Your house happens to be your body. Well, it's in there, and you know, it's like the example I always give. If somebody drops a baby in your door front, you know, like a, you know, in a basket, like, you know, the old stories of a baby in a basket left at a door, you know, at a doorstep, and you open the door and you find the baby, and you look around and, you know, the baby's all by himself. Would you shut the door and say, oh, it's not my problem? That's not my baby. It's not my problem. It's an inconvenience for me. I have to go to work, so I'm not going to care for this living thing. It's not, would you do that? Even if it was an inconvenience, even if it was dumped on you against your will, you still have the moral responsibility to take care of this helpless little thing. So that's why I even find the rape exception kind of like, is it the fetus's fault that he's the product of a rape? I know it's a horrible thing for a woman to go through, a horrible thing, and I could do a whole audio snippet on how stupidly lax our laws are on rape. But, you know, it's not, you don't take it out on the fetus and say, oh, I don't want this thing. Well, yeah, just give it to term, you know, bring it to term and adopt and give it away in adoption. Obviously, you know, I completely understand that. But it's, you know, the baby was dumped at your door front, you know, figuratively and, you know, speaking. So, yes, you're stuck with it. Unfortunately, it's a horrible thing. But don't take it out on the baby. Don't throw the baby in the rubbish bin just because it's an inconvenience that was dumped on you. So So privacy, I don't know how in the world they come up with this stuff, that privacy is there, and somehow state constitution but doesn't support abortion. But why am I talking about all this? First of all, it kind of points out to the judicial activism that comes with the same problem we've had from the founding, that we have never had very clear, much clarity on the boundaries of the judicial branch with the other branches, the legislative branch. So like this lady said, the legislative branch has the right to protect life, but we have to protect the privacy clause. It's like, so she makes up something out of nowhere from the Constitution to neutralize a law that was passed by people who were elected to office to vote, to put these things into law. So that talks about that. But the other thing is, we're talking about South Carolina here. I mean, you can't get any redder, more Republican, more conservative Christian, isolationist Christian than that, than South Carolina. And even in South Carolina, they're having problems banning abortion after 6 weeks. So then the son of a bitch, Jim Hoff, says, oh, conservatives believe that abortion should be decided by the states. See, the thing is, you can't just put a wall around your state and pretend like you're going to build this little heavenly kingdom of conservatism in your state. It's not going to happen. Not going to happen. Next election, boom, the Republicans are gone, and then you have a Democrat governor, and then all hell breaks loose, and then all the gains you have are lost. Even if in South Carolina you can't fully protect abortion, how the hell are you going to protect it anywhere in the country? There's something wrong with the whole system, and you can't rely on federalism to end abortion. It doesn't work. Just like slavery was preserved because of federalism, you couldn't rely on federalism to end slavery. Slavery was protected by federalism. Abortion is going to be protected by federalism. It's the opposite of what the son of a bitch Jim Hoff and all these conservatives think. It just does not work. But they're not willing to understand this. So as I was thinking about this, and I was getting really angry at Jim Hoff, that was earlier last night, I was watching television and thinking about this and saying, you stupid idiots. I was just saying these words to myself in my head. You stupid idiots. You're acting... You're using the federalism argument to deal with the issue of abortion, just like the federalism argument was being used to deal with the issue of slavery, and it didn't work. We had a whole civil war that broke out, and 600,000 Americans died in that conflict, and then we had a half-hearted kind of surrender of the South, and then we went back to the way we were, with all these all the discrimination, the prejudice, and the segregation that happened afterwards, and so we went through all that hell. Nothing changed. Federalism clearly did not work, and these people, I was saying to myself, these people, it's like they're going to repeat the same mistake all over again. Now it's with the issue of abortion, And they don't look back at history and learn from it. And then I said to myself, it's like it never happened. And it was like it never happened. Like the whole Civil War and slavery and all this never happened. And just as I was saying that, in my head, because I wasn't paying attention to what was on television because I was so angry in my head, I was clouded with anger in my head. I was so angry at the son of a bitch Jim Hoft and all these idiots, conservative idiots who have turned their back to the truth. They have deliberately turned their back on me. And I feel it, like I personalize it, because I feel like it's at me, but it's more than me, it's the truth. The thing is that as I came back from my cloud of anger and focused on the television set again, at that very moment, it said Serve. It was a commercial by a company called Serve Pro, and then the commercial ended. Serve Pro, like it never happened, just like it never happened, or something like that. Because they seem to fix problems. Like if you have a problem in your house, some roof hole or some leakage or whatever, they come and fix it. I think that's what the commercial is about. So they leave it as if it, you know, the house as if the problem never happened. That was the slogan. But I just found it so like a confirmation that this is how these people live. Like it never happened. Like all the things we've gone through, and all the mistakes we've made, and all the consequences, like all of that, never happened. And they're going to repeat it, and they're going to double down. And what angers me about this thing about you know, the abortion and the and having it, their solution is no. They should be thinking we should rewrite the Constitution. There's something missing in the Constitution. Like even the South Carolina Constitution apparently is so malleable. It doesn't protect the right of a fetus. It's not even in the South Carolina Constitution, where they can just take some privacy clause, whatever the hell that is, and use it and manipulate it to protect abortion, the practice of abortion. So clearly the solution is not, oh, let's leave it up to the states, because even South Carolina is having problems banning abortion. So the solution is, okay, we have to broaden the debate and say, okay, there's something wrong with our Constitution. We don't have a definition of life. The right to life does not exist. It's one of the five fundamental human rights, and we don't have it there. We need to rewrite the Constitution. But they don't go there, because that would mean questioning the Constitution and questioning the wisdom of the founding fathers, and God forbid that they would do that. Anyone would dare to do that. So they can't go there. So they have to turn to some other solution. So, but the thing is that all of this is a manifestation of just selfishness. It's like, instead of saying, okay, I'm going to think deeper. Okay, we have to clear up what life is and start phrasing it in such a way that even liberals would have to be forced to explain themselves, to explain what life is. And then life would be broad, describing, we described all the characteristics in an audio recording or two from a long time ago. We went through all the details of what life represents, the ability of movement, the ability to reproduce, and all these things, and we went into all these details. And if these principles were plastered in the Constitution, we could then protect life. And not just to feed us, we could protect animals. It would all be constitutional. Murder would be a punishable crime at the federal level, at the national level. We talked about the other case, you know, like the Mississippi burning case, where these people, these guys, this racist murdered three people, and the federal government could not try them for murder because it was not within the scope of the federal government, because the Constitution didn't protect the right to life of these three guys who were killed. These three activists, civil constitutional rights were not violated by these murderers. That's how bad the Constitution is. So they don't go there. The conservatives don't go there to analyze what's wrong with our system, because that would open the door. It's like opening the what I call the reverse Pandora's box of like, okay, oh, that would mean, oh, now we see this thing that's wrong too. And they would start seeing all these things that are wrong with our system and our Constitution, all the mistakes the founding fathers made. They would start seeing this broad scope, but they don't even want to open the box because they are afraid of what they're going to find in it. So they resort to selfishness, you know, federalism. That's their little protection. This is a little umbrella of protection. And go, okay, here I'm going to protect myself, and the hell with everybody else. I am not my brother's keeper. I don't care about the fetuses being aborted in New York. I don't care about the fetuses being aborted in California. I don't care about the fetuses being aborted in Washington State. Who the hell cares about those blue states? You know, it's their problem. It's, you know, they're the ones voting for that trash, so let them deal with it. But the fetus didn't vote. Stupid Jim, son of a bitch, Hoft. The fetus didn't go to the polls and vote and pull the lever for the Democrat Party. The fetus hasn't even been born yet, you stupid son of a bitch. Why is the fetus, why are you going to say let the fetus be punished for the mistakes of the people of the state of New York when the fetus had nothing to do with it, you stupid son of a bitch?
And I'll keep saying that over again. You stupid, selfish son of a bitch. You're a Cain. C-A-I-N. That's what you are. Because you keep asking, am I my brother's keeper? And the answer is always, hell no, hell no, hell no. That is conservatism in a nutshell. We have gone way over the time. And we will continue talking about this, I think, in the next audio snippet. The America's conservatives have turned their backs to the truth. They have decided to turn against the river and put a dam to turn the river back. And that is the significance of Tina Turner's death. And that's why I personally will, if I live long enough to be able to do it, I will leave this country and renounce my American citizenship, because the country will be dead in less than 4 months. And it will become a third world, a hellhole, and cursed are you, you worthless, stupid son of a bitch conservatives, worthless, you bastards and whores, for upholding your idolatry, because you are the reason why this country's dying, not the liberals. Liberals are there because of you, because of your stupidity. They are destroying the country because of your stupidity. So at the end of the day, you're the one accountable. Cursed are you, you worthless conservative idiots. Cursed are you. The truth has turned its back on you, and you are lost, and you have no hope, and faith cannot be used as a crutch to withhold what is coming. Thank you very much for listening.